Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Always a pleasure to be with you. On this Tuesday, a lot to discuss on the topic of equity, Pride Month. It is that month after all, so of course there's going to be a lot of stories in that regard. We're going to talk about our favorite local school district, you know, that has been really distracted by issues around race and racism and LGBTQ rights. I am so happy to report that we've reviewed their last few meetings, and it seems like they're back on track, focusing on the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic. We'll have an update from the Olympia School District coming up shortly. Also, Seattle isn't going to let another crisis go to waste without another working group to solve issues that have been getting worse for the next decade. The drug issue is the latest that is going to be, we were told, solved by a working group. Also, a stunning law out of the state of California, a proposal that just underscores for me why you need to sign Referendum 101 in Washington State to reverse Senate Bill 5599. I'll tease our meet and greet on that to give you an opportunity just in a moment. And then later on, what is a gay dog toy exactly? Our version of The View, The Stranger in Washington State, has an article that talks about the misconduct of law enforcement officers who showed up at a Pride event and bought gay dog toys. We'll discuss. I mentioned there just a moment ago the fact that we've been pushing for you to sign Referendum 101, which would send Senate Bill 5599 to voters in Washington State. That's the bill that allows your child of any age to run away from a shelter, say, hey, I'm here to seek gender-affirming care or reproductive health care, and the shelter won't tell you where your child is. So I just want to remind you, we're going to have a meet and greet coming up this Sunday in Arlington, Washington, at Elemental Cider Company from 2 to 4 p.m. That's Father's Day. I can't think of a better day to fight for your rights as a parent. So you can show up, you can say hello. And also, if you choose to, sign Referendum 101. So just a reminder, make sure to share that with your family and friends so they can show up and sign it as well. As always, thank you to Undivided subscribers. If you're not a subscriber already, please do join us for as little as $5 a month. It's how we make this independent show possible. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. As I mentioned, we talked a lot about the Olympia School District, which has become kind of a poster child for woke gone wild in our public education system. We did an exclusive report last week about this crazy sex ed lesson taught to fourth and fifth graders by a representative from Planned Parenthood. Anyway, I am so thrilled to report that after all the backlash over the things this school district has done, they seem like they're back on track. They seem like they got the message, and now they're going to focus on the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic, preparing your child for life out in the world, a higher education. We've reviewed a couple of their recent meetings, and I was just so pleasantly surprised. Now, with one notable exception, I will say at the beginning of one of these meetings, they decided to read a Pride Month declaration. Now, that's okay. I mean, I understand that, that they need to make sure that everyone in the community and parents and teachers know that they will be celebrating and reflecting on Pride Month in Olympia Public Schools. So we'll give them this one. Here they go.
We will now have a proclamation for Pride Month for June 2023. The Olympia School District Board of Directors of Olympia School District Number 111, Thurston County, Olympia, Washington, do declare support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, intersex, asexual, and agender LGBTQIA students, families, and staff. Whereas our students, families, and staff have the right to be treated consistent with their gender identity and sexual orientation at school. And whereas the LGBTQIA plus students report higher rates of being bullied or harassed at school, resulting in higher rates of dropout, academic failure, and disengagement. And whereas LGBTQIA plus students in the Olympia School District are bright, brilliant youth, who are engaged in self and social liberation in spite of this bullying and harassment, and be it further resolved that the board calls on district staff to teach with the resources and engage in professional learning that further journey toward gender inclusive schools during the month of June and all year long.
So we let them get that out of their system. Their proclamation, 2 pages long, also includes the whereas our students have the right to engage in reflection and honest conversations in school communities of issues of social justice, equity, and the intersectionality of oppression and discrimination. So yeah, again, okay, they're still, you know, they're learning. At least they're making an effort, though, because I'll tell you, after that Pride Month declaration, they had a three-hour meeting focused only on the issue of education. Listen.
There are not a lot of school districts that sit down and publicly walk through and talk through racial disproportionality in discipline rates and graduation rates and think about what are the impacts of trans and queer exclusion in the classroom. And we're having those conversations. That's how we create the discomfort that Director Flores is talking about, where we grow.
We are lucky we live in Washington State, where we have even more expansive civil rights laws than the federal law, including the rights of gender identity expression, transgender youth. I spent a little bit of time downtown on Saturday at our celebration for our trans flag crosswalk.
It's important to practice shutting up and listening when our students speak and tell us the direction we need to go in terms of being more inclusive, being maximally inclusive, being a district of celebration and liberation for all of our students.
I don't want this to be negotiable. Like, we're going to negotiate whether or not we're going to provide a transgender student their rights. That's not negotiable. On the very first slide, you get a visceral negative reaction out of me by saying broken families on that. I don't think that is actually a culturally responsive phrase to refer to single parent families. Something might seem neutral on its face, but it actually has a disparate impact based on poverty or race or any of those different types of demographics. There's some messaging out there where people are acting like this is a debate. And I'm like, no, civil rights is not a debate. People are allowed to have their civil rights in public schools. So sorry, that was my, is that a bow?
Okay, all right, you know, maybe that three-hour meeting got a little bit off the rails, but I tell you what, they are really trying. They're really trying to recenter on what public schools should be about, you know, the basics of teaching kids in the basic areas. And that's why, at another recent meeting, they had an awards ceremony for teachers, for only the best of the best teachers in the school district who are there doing what they should be doing, which is, again, giving your child a proper education. Here's one of the award recipients.
It is my privilege to open tonight's recognition of employees from throughout the district who have been selected as honored recipients of our 2023 Olympia School District Employee Recognition Awards. And I'd like to call forward our Executive Director of Human Resources, Mr. Scott Neiman, to introduce our most deserving honorees.
Tonight, we honor and celebrate those who represent our collective best. Let's begin with our first recognition, the Champion of Differences, which celebrates diversity. This year's winner is Deborah Need, ELA teacher at Reeves Middle School.
So Deborah engages in multiple professional development opportunities to make her classroom and grading more equitable. Her slam poetry work with students this year helped them create moving poetry about their experiences with discrimination and injustice. She has been on our equity committee for years now and continues to help develop school-wide SEL curriculum that gives students space to discuss identity, diversity, inclusion, and injustice. She provides our staff with reading materials about equity and about being anti-racist, which helps us grow as a whole building. Last year, she voiced a concern about our systemic approach to supporting students. This year, we developed a new student support team model based on a tracking device that Deborah and another teacher created outside of their workday.
Okay, all right. So maybe they're not fully focused on the basics of public education, but I mean, they had to award that teacher. She's working on anti-racist curriculum on her free time. The dedication shown by that fine educator. Now, I will say, in case you think that I fooled you by saying that the Olympia School District is back to focusing on and celebrating a quality education, they did take time to congratulate the hardworking, dedicated students who are going to be graduating soon.
Graduation seems to be a really great time for many, many students, but for some students, it's really not. It's a really difficult time because either they didn't get to graduate, or maybe they didn't graduate with the grade point average that they would like to, or maybe they feel a little bit left behind because they're not a straight A student, they're a straight C student, but you know what, you still get your diploma. And so I think it's just really important that we hold up these students and make sure that that they are recognized and know that they are worth so much more than just a piece of paper. And I think that's really, really important.
So if a kid didn't work hard enough, no, that's like, not on them.
Like, what?
They weren't like, taught to work hard enough to get into A's. The mouse pad covering your face.
I have nothing. Oh, now my makeup. Oh, now my makeup. Okay, I'm sorry. No, we will keep hoping for the best. For the other thing.
You held it together pretty well. For the first three.
I have snot coming out my mouth.
Why? I can't. What do you want me to do? Take the camera off of you?
Okay. Godspeed to those Olympia School District graduates. You're going to need it. I don't think something tells me. Something tells me you're not prepared for the real world. Okay. All right. Oh, good. We're good. You know, I wonder what kids think of this, what students think of this. Well, they watch this. Like, is this just, and you'll notice everyone, I think without exception, was white in those videos, right? And so I have to wonder, like, is this what kids want? Nicole found this clip that's been going viral about, you know, sometimes we capture what happens in schools when teachers are so focused on this stuff. So this is in California. This clip is in California. So it's not like it's in some red state. And the teacher is showing, this is a math class in Edison High School in Huntington Beach, California. We don't really know why. It was like a pride video, okay, because it's Pride Month being shown to these kids. Just listen to the reaction of the kids. Shows like two women kissing.
Wow, Miss Clark. Wow. Why are you showing this to kids?
Hey, I'll warn you guys now. If you're going to be inappropriate, I will have supervision down and give all of you a Saturday school for next year. So knock it off.
Okay.
Why are you showing this to us?
Yeah. If the kids are going to be inappropriate, the teacher says.
Right.
They're in a math class in Huntington Beach, California, being shown a pride video with women kissing, which, again, I love the LGBTQ community. Fine. But you're in a math class. Why are you showing a picture of kids kissing? And even the kids are like, why are you showing this to us?
Right.
She's like, if you misbehave, if you act inappropriate, I'm going to give you a Saturday class next year as a punishment.
Oh. It would be inappropriate to have a male and a female kissing in a math class. Like, why are you showing them anything like this?
Super strange. The sexualization is just weird. But good for those kids who are, like, so weirded out by it, they're recording it. And ask her, why are you showing us this? I don't know what that has to do with mathematics. Let's see. I wanted to, man, this one, okay, I got to get serious. I got to wipe away the tears from my makeup situation. I've really tried to hold it together during the Olympia School District because this is it's dead serious stuff. So I warned people during the debate over Senate Bill 5599 in Washington State that it was a slippery slope. If you as a state, and now this is law, liken physical abuse in the home to a parent who might have concerns about their child getting gender care, if you're saying those two things are the same, right, and that they're both justification for your child to go to a shelter and for you not to be told their physical location, then what would stop the state from taking your child away from you? Because you can take a child away from a parent if they're physically abusing them. So now if you've likened physical abuse to not, you know, conforming to their desires about their gender, then what would stop that from being the next law that the state tries to put through. Or we heard this down in Oregon where they had this mom who sued because essentially she wasn't allowed to adopt these foster kids because she wouldn't promise and like promise on paper that she would abide by their chosen gender or get them gender reassignment surgery. So this is crazy, crazy stuff. And I want to play for you. So there's a bill that's proposed in California called AB 957, where by some readings of the bill, although the bill's sponsor will say though that that's not the case, a parent could lose custody for not affirming their child's beliefs about their own gender. Here's the bill's sponsor.
So this particular bill adds the very important factor that affirming a child's gender identity is in their best interest, which is what your question is about. Why does it actually say that in an affirmative way? And it really is because if you have a seven-year-old who's talking about having a potential to say, being able to articulate that they believe that they are not the same gender as they are biologically, then it should be affirmed. And through care, it should be determined. And that's what we did with our own child. And that would give ability for a parent who wasn't sure to affirm and get their child the care that they need to make that, so they can begin to articulate that determination. But by saying and rejecting it in wholesale, then you're essentially rejecting your child. And that is not in the best interest of a child. We should be affirming our children in every possible way.
So, wow, a few things there. If you were in a custody dispute, let's say you're getting a divorce, there is a custody dispute over who is going to be the primary parent, and you are the parent who says, oh, no, I don't agree with my child wanting to transition, you know, at a young age or something, then under this law, that would weigh against you as a parent in determining whether you're the one who would get primary or sole custody of a child. And the fact that this lawmaker in California is using a seven-year-old as an example to say, if you have a seven-year-old who is able to clearly discuss why they believe that they are not in the correct body or need to be a different gender, then we need to make sure that we are conforming as parents to that child's needs. You're talking about a seven-year-old kid and their wants or whims or desires as a seven-year-old should dictate what you do as an adult, as the parent, and furthermore, the law should use that against you as a parent if you're not okay bending to the whims of a seven-year-old. I mean, for the love, how many of us as kids had that one friend in the friend group who was like a tomboy for 4 or 5 years or something? And you've got a seven-year-old who says, hey, I like sports and I like all these things that traditionally people would associate with a woman. And then because they're being, you know, told in school and you get the Olympia school district talking about transgender everything all the time, then you have this child who's almost like led to believe at seven that it's not just maybe, say, being a tomboy or they like some things that traditionally people associate with women, that they actually need to be a different gender. And then as a parent, if you don't go along with that, your child, you might not get custody of your child. That's wild stuff. But again, that's why it's so critically important to push back against, you know, even in Senate Bill 5599 in Washington, when people pushed back, they were called anti-transgender. And the sponsors of the bill said, oh, you're misreading it. Your interpretation of it is fear-mongering. This is why. Because other bills like this follow, be it the bill that pertains to foster kids in Oregon or their actual practice when it comes to adopting foster children in Oregon, this bill in California that basically says you're not a fit parent if you don't abide by what your seven-year-old wants their gender to be, that is the slippery slope. That is the slippery slope that we're talking about. So even if you look at Senate Bill 5599 in Washington and think there might be some valid reasons for it, that you don't want a kid to end up homeless, so if you allow them to go to a shelter where they know their parents aren't going to be told about their location, then yeah, I'd rather that happen than a kid be homeless. Even if you agree with that, I'd ask you, do you agree with what's happening in Oregon around foster parents? Do you agree with this proposal around California, or in California, around what could happen with your child if you don't abide by their gender identity? If the answer is no, then you have to stop Senate Bill 5599 in its tracks. And you have to sign Referendum 101. And I've been saying, and Nicole, if you want to put the information back up about our meet and greet on Sunday, and look, I encourage you to go to reject5599.com, because even if you can't come to one of our meet and greets, there are other locations where you can sign it at any time. But even if you find things in Senate Bill 5599 that you don't think are particularly bad, I encourage you to think about where that could go, and at least to want parents to have a say. That's really what Referendum 101 is about to me. If at the end of the day, Washington voters want to keep 5599, fine. Who am I to say, oh, the will of the voters isn't correct? But I really think that parents ought to have a say in whether their parental rights are going to continue to be eroded. It's really serious stuff. And Oregon, California, Washington, they're always lockstep on these things. So when I see a proposal like that out of Oregon, when I see a proposal like that out of California, I think it is not too long before there's a proposal like that here. So it's something to be concerned about and something to have on your radar. Okay. I haven't fully recovered from the Olympia School District. I literally have snot and mucus in my nose still.
Thanks for that
detail. We're all close. I can tell you guys these things. All right. Coming up, we're going to follow up on a story we started talking about yesterday around the city of Seattle, what it's going to do now that they voted down a proposal that would have criminalized drug use and possession in a city that's having a drug overdose crisis. So I'll give you the mayor of Seattle's big announcement coming up next. But first, I've been talking about First Mark Insurance. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge. We're so glad we did. We learned a lot about insurance. It was like a crash course in insurance, which was great because insurance is confusing, I'll just be honest. But we also ended up getting much better insurance for about the same price. So it was a no-brainer. As Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, explained, Mike and I found out we were really, really undercovered. Would you say our primary issue is we were undercovered?
I would. Yeah.
And what's the risk for someone of being undercovered?
Yeah, so I think it's real common for us to see on a liability level that folks don't have enough coverage. Because in the state of Washington, there's the state minimum limits of coverage that the state says, hey, if you have these limits, you're legal. And I think that can be confused with legal equals adequately covered, and that's not the case. So the risk is if you get in an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, you get in an auto accident that's your fault, and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan or come after your equity in your home or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
And the nice thing is it's free. You have First Mark Insurance that steps up. They go over all your current coverage, come back to you and say, hey, here's what we think you need. Here's the price of it. You could save a ton of money. You could get much better insurance. And they do all of that for free. And then they're your go-to. They work for you, not the insurance companies. Again, it really is a no-brainer. If you have a little bit of time to do it, it costs you nothing. And you could end up saving a lot of money. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge. And like Mike and I, become a member of the First Mark family. Okay, we talked on the show yesterday, also most of the week last week, about the absolute disaster of a vote in the Seattle City Council around drug possession and drug use. There was a proposal up that went up for a vote in Seattle that would have said, yeah, we're going to handle those as misdemeanor cases in the city attorney's office because we already know the King County prosecutor isn't going to prosecute those cases. So they're basically like, we need an avenue to prosecute those cases or to have the option to prosecute those cases because what's happening on our streets is unacceptable. Well, it comes down for a vote. The deciding no vote was Andrew Lewis, the councilman for downtown. And then after that, I mean, the business community was just, he was persona non grata to them. The Seattle Times did this article, this op-ed, the editorial board questioning, where was Mayor Bruce Harrell during all of that? Why didn't he help get this done? They were being very critical. In fact, the article ended with this sentence about somewhere in Seattle right now, someone is looking at Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell and thinking to themselves, I can do better. I was like, wow, shots fired from the ed board thinking maybe somebody else ought to run for that seat. So anyway, of course, the mayor of Seattle, I think he's trying to prop Andrew Lewis up because Andrew Lewis, I mean, if that vote that he took doesn't cost him his seat. I just don't know what would. But anyway, so Bruce Harrell announces he's going to come out. They're going to talk about their plan. And he rolls out. Andrew Lewis is behind him just looking frail and tired, like it's been the worst week of his life. And Bruce Harrell starts by reflecting on the vote last week that got everyone so upset.
The outcry and frustration coming out of last week's vote is not really about who is responsible for prosecution in those cases. It's about the conditions on our street. It's about the health crisis playing out right in front of our eyes and the people suffering and dying from a new kind of poison and how those elements combined all together make our neighbors feel unsafe and unwelcome. That's our greatest fear, to feel unsafe, to believe our lives are at risk. And worse, to believe that our city government, all four corners, the executive, the city council, the municipal court judges, and the city attorney's office, the four corners of our structure, what is worse is to believe that we are incapable or unwilling to address it. I beg to differ.
And I agree, that is bad, to see what's happening on our streets and to think, for the love of God, you guys can't come together and come up with a solution. So the mayor's standing there, and my natural question is, okay, well, what are you going to do about it then?
Our purpose here today is very simple. To define with clarity, as a working group, what will occur within the next coming weeks regarding this issue and how we will discuss an ordinance and an executive order to address the issues I just discussed.
Ah, yes, the old working group route is going to come up with something that is going to be better than the bill that was voted down last week. And the natural then question is, okay, if the working group is going to do this, when can we expect the working group to bring a solution forth, Mr. Mayor?
Good question. I don't know. I'm using the term coming weeks because ultimately it rests with the city council. I have in my mind what a great ordinance could look like, the parameters accompanied with an executive order, but I was told don't use a specific date. But to be a little more direct, I know they do go on break by it's the last week of August, and so we hope to get it accomplished before then, but I'm not going to commit the city council. That might be a more appropriate question for them. I'll tell you what, this work group will start working immediately on what this ordinance and executive order looks like.
Oh, the work group will start working immediately. And in the meantime, people will continue to die on our streets. In the meantime, we have a major sporting event coming to our city. No obvious solution for what to do to try to force people into treatment or in the throes of addiction, mental health issues, committing crimes on our street. Great. And I'll go back to what I said about Andrew Lewis yesterday. You know, Andrew Lewis, after this embarrassing vote where he absolutely spit in the face of every single one of his constituents in downtown Seattle, he came out and he said, well, I'm going to come up with a real plan and I'm going to put forth a real plan. And my question for Andrew Lewis isn't why he didn't vote on the real plan that was proposed last week. It's why he hasn't come up with a real plan in the last 4 years that he's been in office. We've been in the midst of a worsening drug crisis. Every single day it gets worse from when you took office, when you asked for your job at the end of 2019. And I would say the same thing to Mayor Bruce Harrell. You're standing there after a crisis vote last week as things are falling apart downtown. Your solution is a working group that's going to get to work right away. Well, it's getting to work far too late. And Mayor Bruce Harrell, I have been easy on you. I would even go as far to say as I have been kind on this show to you because you've been saying the right things. It's time to do the right thing. And for the council, the time to do the right thing was really last week. But there can't be any more pussyfooting around this issue. People are dying. And having an avenue to force them into treatment via, yes, sometimes an arrest or a few days in jail, has to be part of the solution. And that solution has to come now, not at some unforeseen point in time down the road. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, there's a story Nicole put in here that I probably have an unpopular opinion about, but that's great. I love having unpopular opinions. That's fine. So tied to the drug issue, you might recall, so back in 2021, when this whole issue around substance abuse and the law started to unravel, so the state Supreme Court ruled that our felony drug possession statute, as was written, was unconstitutional. It was a decision, Blake v. Washington. And the reason it was unconstitutional is because it didn't have the word knowingly in it. So it didn't account for someone who, honest to God, might have been possessing drugs and they didn't know it. Like, you know, the whole not my pants defense. And so what it did, it rendered the law unconstitutional. And so in theory, every conviction that had happened in the past under that law was a conviction that was unconstitutional. And so, Siri just started talking to me. Siri, I don't need you right
now. Did you sit on her?
I guess. So every conviction that happened in the past was unconstitutional. And so now the state of Washington is having to pay out millions and millions of dollars to people with past drug convictions. I mean, obviously you had their convictions expunged. We don't really put people in prison for only drug crimes. You didn't have people who needed to be like sprung from the slammer. You did have people, however, who, you know, you have something called an offender score. So let's say they had previous drug offenses and then they committed a serious crime or a violent crime. Those previous drug offenses contributed to their sentence on the other crime being more severe. So you had to go in, you had to rework all of that. Here's the article from Fox 13, millions in reimbursement heading to people convicted in law deemed unconstitutional. And look, I know that that's probably frustrating to a lot of people because when these individuals violated the law, at the time, as it was written, they knew it was against the law, as written. I am assuming the vast majority of these people who are going to be getting money actually did illegally possess a hard drug. But I've said before, I am a slave to the Constitution. And that's part of due process in this country and part of the criminal legal system is that you have to be convicted in a constitutional manner. And so I actually agree with the state Supreme Court's decision that the law as written was unconstitutional. I don't necessarily like it, but I agree with it on a constitutional basis. So who am I to say that these individuals convicted under a now unconstitutional law aren't, you know, entitled to some sort of reimbursement? I don't particularly love it, but I agree with it for those reasons. And I'm very curious to hear what you guys think about those settlements and the fact that taxpayers are now on the hook for a bunch of money paid to these individuals. Okay, we've got a double dose of unbelievable today. Pew, pew. So let's get to our first edition of Unbelievable. I'm actually shocked that the White House has responded to this, but I want to play the video that went instantly viral yesterday. So the White House had a Pride Day event. Again, fine. I think there's a lot of other stuff going on, but not a surprise. So at this Pride Day event, there was a transgender influencer. I mean, there were several there, but there was one in particular who put together a video. You can see in the video that she meets the first lady, she meets the president, you know, they exchange words. But it's what happened toward the end of the video that had, I would say, 99.9% of the internet outraged, and rightfully so. Listen.
Welcome to the White House.
Thank you. Can we take a little video? Hi, Mr. President. It is an honor. Trans rights are human rights.
Are we topless at the White House?
Are you
some of the bravest, most inspiring people I've ever known.
So you have this influencer, part of the video, put together, you know, with her greeting the president and the first lady. So this is a biological man who has breast implants. And so as part of the video, if you're only listening, what you see is the White House in the background, the People's House. And this transgender woman has taken the top of her dress down to her waist, has her hands over her fake breasts to cover the nipples, and is jiggling her boobs in front of the White House. And then next to her is a biological woman who has transitioned to be a man with their top off, and you can see that they've had top surgery. Insane. And I had said when this video came out yesterday, I said, I dare a White House correspondent to ask Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, about this. And I haven't been able to watch her press briefing today, but the White House did release a statement. Thank God. They said, this behavior is inappropriate and disrespectful for any event at the White House. It is not reflective of the event we hosted to celebrate LGBTQI+ families or the other hundreds of guests who were in attendance. individuals in the video will not be invited to future events. One would hope. I hate that I have to be surprised that the White House actually put out an unequivocal statement saying that, yeah, you can't cover your nipples and hold your boobs and shake them all over the place in front of the White House.
And she was really bummed that she's been banned because she was just expressing her joy.
Just expressing her joy.
Just being her true self, expressing joy.
Insane. As we say, unbelievable. Okay, let's get to our double dose of unbelievable. Go ahead. I've learned about a little something called a gay dog toy. I don't really know. I don't know when I go to the dog store, the pet store, I don't see like the shelf for dog toys and then gay dog toys. I don't really know what a gay dog toy is. I've posed that question of The Stranger, Seattle's alternative weekly newspaper, because they're the ones who brought up gay dog toys. They tweeted out an article yesterday. Their tweet said, Capitol Hill Pride Festival asked cops not to come last year. A handful showed up in uniform and shopped for gay dog toys. Seattle's Office of Police Accountability found that SPD did nothing wrong. And then they have an eye roll emoji. So the article itself is also just as confusing as the gay dog toy thinks. Again, I'm still waiting to find out what a gay dog toy is. So the article itself talks about how and you might recall this, Capitol Hill Pride told cops, SPD, you're not welcome at our event last year. And they're doing that again this year. And they, even though the event that they were banning police officers from is in a city park, you can't really ban the police from a city park. But they basically told them, we don't want you here. So there were a few officers who showed up anyway, and apparently last year shopped for gay dog toys, whatever that means. And some folks who were at this event were very, very offended by their presence. And they reported it to the Office of Police Accountability to investigate the fact that these officers showed up in a public park because they weren't invited. So somebody thought that that was an actual violation of police policy, and they shopped for gay dog toys. So here's the article itself from The Stranger. Cops trolled Pride last year and got away with it. Capitol Hill Pride is banning officers again this year. Here's the paragraphs of this article that caught my attention. Last year, Capitol Hill Pride filed a complaint with the Office of Police Accountability after five uniformed Seattle Police Department officers showed up to their festival to shop for gay dog clothes, even though organizers told them to stay away. Months later, the OPA found that those officers had done nothing wrong. Police can stroll through Cal Anderson Park no matter what anyone says, including the Seattle Pride and Capitol Hill Pride organizers who issued bans on uniformed police. The finding raises questions about how far Pride police bans can really go and about the degree to which SPD is willing to read a room. First of all, you cannot, this sentence just cracks me up. Police can stroll through Cal Anderson Park no matter what anyone says, including the Seattle Pride and Capitol Hill Pride organizers who issued bans on uniformed police. You cannot ban anyone as a private entity from a public park. I can't go occupy a park and stand in there and say, all writers from The Stranger are banned from this park, as much as I might want to ban them from my presence anywhere at any time. And so I just think it's funny that The Stranger is having this full-blown meltdown in this article about the fact that the OPA, the Office of Police Accountability, didn't find any wrongdoing of these officers who strolled through a public park, despite some people not wanting them there, and shopped for gay dog toys. Yeah, news to The Stranger, but you actually can't tell police where they can and cannot go, unless it's in your private home and they don't have a search warrant, as an example. Absolutely unbelievable. But if anybody knows what a gay dog toy is, please do enlighten me. Is it just, Nicole, like a rainbow-colored
like I'm guessing that's
toy?
What it is.
Like a rainbow?
A bunch of rainbow toys. Okay. But, you know, I don't know.
Is so it it's for, not...
I've known some dogs that are likely gay.
Well, it's not... So well, yeah, I mean, I've
be
known...
for a gay dog.
So that's my question. Is it toys meant for a gay dog? Or are they gay toys meant for any dog? As long as the dog's an ally.
Maybe both. Maybe this is a special retailer that has both.
Okay. Because I want my dog to have... It's Pride Month. So if my dog is seen without a Pride gay dog toy, I'm worried what people might think of my dog.
So what other dogs might think of your dog.
Yeah, I'm worried about what other dogs or the riders at the stranger. Like, can you imagine if I'm out in Seattle walking my dog and the dog has a straight dog toy on Pride Month? The stranger would lose it.
Humiliating.
I don't need another article written about me and the stranger. So someone, please inform me. All right, coming up next, we'll check in quick on what's happening with Trump and his court appearance and Biden and the whole bribery scheme that people are accusing him of. A lot going on in and around the White House. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, awesome real estate agent who's been doing that in this area for a long time. He and his team at Wes Jones & Associates have an innovative marketing strategy to help make sure that you get top dollar for your home with the fewest possible contingencies. And he also is just great for advice. If you're thinking about selling your home, you're not really sure where the market is at. I had Wes Jones in and he said he does see a window of opportunity for home sellers.
There's some pent-up buyer demand because buyers really went on strike starting last August and nothing happened. I should say very little happened the rest of the year. And it feels like we're getting back to your traditional seasonal real estate periods where a lot of home sales happen in the spring. So pent-up buyer demand, not a whole lot of options for buyers to purchase home, means that it's a great time to sell a home if you have to do something.
Yeah, so if you're in the market to sell your home or you think you're going to soon be in the market to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. They also have a handy evaluation tool where they, like a little calculator on the website, where if you want to know what your home is worth, you can go there, plug it in, and it can give you an estimate. And it might be worth more than you think. But bottom line is reach out to our friend Wes Jones, get some advice on selling your home, what he and his team can do to get you the top possible dollar, sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, let's dip outside of Washington State for a moment to check in on what's happening around Trump, around Biden. It's enough to just make me want to skip the 2024 election altogether. But then I guess who would be president? Because if Biden's going to stay president, I don't want that either. So Donald Trump had his court appearance in Florida. That has now happened. He pled not guilty in the classified documents case. I know that's not a particular surprise. There had been a lot of chatter online about how, oh, they're not allowing cameras or recorders or cell phones in. That's very normal. I know some people are up in arms about that, but that's a very normal thing in federal court. It was always an annoyance of mine covering federal court cases in Seattle. Not allowing cameras, not allowing recording devices, very normal. Sometimes in extraordinary cases, they wouldn't let you bring a phone in either because obviously phones have the capability to be a camera and to be a recording device. So it's not that I particularly like it. I don't like any time where the press is limited in that fashion, but it's not some odd scenario like MSNBC and them want to pretend. Although MSNBC did let us know, importantly, that just because cameras weren't in the room doesn't mean that people with eyeballs weren't in the room. And they thought we should know that Donald Trump sat stone-faced and he was wearing a blue suit and a red tie. Thank you. Thank you for letting us know and painting that vivid picture for us. So anyway, I mean, this is going to be, you know, obviously a story that's going to linger over the former president as he's on the campaign trail. He has not stayed silent about it. He's spoken about it to reporters. I don't think that's, and O.J. Simpson gave him the advice yesterday. It's probably not a particularly good practice to talk about an ongoing criminal case that you're involved in, but it's not like Donald Trump not to talk about it. Meanwhile, Nicole brought this up, and I think it's a good point, and I swear we had talked about it on the show before, but I guess we didn't. I know I talked about it when I was on Fox News one morning on my prime time slot on Fox News where I go on Fox and Friends first, which is Fox and Friends before Fox and Friends. Prime. It's very early. It's like 1 a.m. Pacific time. I'm pretty sure I talked about this on here, but there's this continued, as the stuff is going on with Trump, and I realize that a lot of this is tit for tat, where you got Republicans who are like, let's ignore what's happening with Trump, but focus on what's happening with Biden. And then Democrats are like, let's ignore what's happening with Biden and focus on what's happening with Trump. And it's all just incredibly annoying. But it all needs to be taken seriously. I mean, I don't want anyone in a position of power to feel like they're above the law. But I also don't want them to be the subject of a politically motivated hit job. And so there's got to be a balance there. But I'm sure by now you've heard about what's going on with Biden, Hunter Biden, with family members. There's these accusations and this tit for tat between the GOP in the House and the FBI and the DOJ about this ongoing investigation into an alleged bribery scheme between then VP Biden, Hunter Biden, foreign nationals. Chuck Grassley got up and he spoke on the floor of the Senate, and he said that the foreign national who allegedly bribed Joe and Hunter Biden has audio recordings of the conversations, 17 recordings in total. And look, if they do, that's very serious. I hope that they make it to the proper entities, and certainly I hope the American people get a chance to hear them. I'm just so jaded, I think, at this point, with all the investigations to nowhere into Donald Trump and just the political nature of all of this, that until I hear the recordings, I just don't believe anything that I'm told ever that's politically motivated. But if those recordings exist, if there's a bribery scheme, we can't have two standards of justice. And that's really what it comes down to at the end of the day. So we'll monitor both of those. Okay, we'll take your questions from the live stream. I'm still recovering from my my laughing bout at the beginning of the show. I'm sure you guys were making fun of me in the live chat. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I've been talking about them because it worked for me. That's the bottom line. And I think the before and after pictures that I've shown of me in November at an event, worst picture I've ever taken in my entire life. You know, Nicole, I was thinking about something the other day. I was at an event with you around that same time. And I remember what I was wearing too. I had this like green gown on. And we took pictures at this little photo booth thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at the pictures and being like, do I look like that? And you're like, oh, no, that's just a bad picture. I looked like that.
I'm going to find that. I think I have that.
No, don't find that.
I'm going to say that you didn't look like that. I don't remember you looking like that before picture either. So.
Look, I had gained 42 pounds. I hate looking back at those photos. And so I'm so glad I can go into the summer and know that, like, oh, I'm going to like all the photos that I take. Unless it's like the photos Nicole takes of me where I'm like, she looks great and she's smiling because she only cares what she looks like. And I'm like, one eye closed with a triple chin. Thanks, Nicole.
I don't post those
anyway,
ones.
Super off track. I've lost more than 35 pounds on the program. And that's why I say like this, the pictures speak for themselves. I lost most of that in 2 months. And I found the program really easy to follow. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routine, no hypnosis or anything crazy. It just teaches you how to eat better and then how to keep it off for life. I haven't gained any of the weight back, so that's been awesome. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I made that jingle up. Maybe they should use that jingle.
Maybe.
And by the way, if you do the program and you want to send me before and after pictures, I'd love to show them on the show
as well.
Okay, shall we get to comments? I'm in a mood today.
Okay.
Let me see here. On our friends at the Olympia School District, just struggling. Rory says public schools are going to run themselves out of work. All the families we know are homeschooling now. Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you know, my family growing up wouldn't have been able to homeschool. It just wouldn't have been financially feasible. I mean, I suppose my dad could have homeschooled us, but that would have been a disaster. But, you know, one of the things when we had on Alicia Perkins, the Olympia School District mom, her and her husband both went to the district. She sent two kids to the district, has a third that's a senior. And she said that she's worried what it's going to get to is these public schools that behave like this are going to become these kind of niche schools where it's like an Evergreen State College elementary, where the only parents who send their kids there are the ones who like all this like highly ideological teaching. And then everybody else is either going to go into private school or homeschool or send their kids to another district. And so you're going to have these weird, like very different school districts where depending on where your child went, they got like a fully different education, which is super, super strange. Let me see here. Deanne says honoring a teacher about her equity is not teaching quality education. Oh, okay. I hear the sarcasm now. She said, yes, it was all sarcastic. And that's the thing is like, I'm sure I don't know anything about that teacher that got an award for equity. I'm sure she's a nice lady. I don't know anything about her personally. I was going to beep out her name because I didn't want, you know, it to be about her personally. But the fact that their very first award that they give for teachers after a full school year had to do with her coming up with anti-racism initiatives on her free time. Like, really? That's the teacher. You're only honoring a handful of teachers for the whole school year. And that's what you choose to honor is the anti-racist work that they're bringing into the classroom that they've completed on their free time. It's very strange stuff.
The child talking about it seems totally, you know, they've bought into it. Like, that's the most important thing that they were taught that year.
Right. I don't know if that was a child that was, giving the award to her.
Like a child. Yeah,
no, I think it was a young teacher. Oh, I think it was another staff member.
I thought I was maybe a high schooler.
No, it looked like staff members.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I could be wrong.
I don't know.
They looked young, but I think they were staffers.
Okay.
Let me see here. Okay. Crafty Grandma. Hello, Crafty Grandma. I hope you're doing well. I still love your keychain that you got us, that you made us. So we were talking about this California assemblywoman who's saying if a kid, a seven-year-old, can properly articulate that they want to be a different gender, we need to abide by whatever our kids want and affirm that. Crafty Grandma says, I need a snort jar. I need to stop snorting. It's not ladylike. It's not elegant. It's not.
Can you control it?
No, it's not intellectual. Let's have a snort jar. This is your task. Okay. Make me a snort jar.
All right.
I'll put a dollar in it every time I snort, and we'll donate it to our charity of the year.
Okay.
We Heart Seattle.
Oh, I thought we were Andrea Suarez drinks,
with right, We Heart Seattle. Idea. You're about to get rich. So, Crafty Grandma says, so if the seven-year-old wants to be a space alien, we should affirm that. And shoot them into outer space. Oh, you guys are funny.
I mean,
today.
But it's true. I mean, if you're going to say there's, you know, they can make this decision, but they can't make this decision, or they can decide this, but not this. And just 18 is adult. They can do what they want after they're an adult.
Yeah. When I was that age, I wanted to be the president. Do you go and run like a coup and overthrow the president and then instill me in office because I want to be the president? It's stupid. Let's see here. I was that tomboy. At 60, I still don't conform to many traditional female things, but I'm 100% heterosexual female. Deanne said that about, you know, when you're a kid, I think it's normal for kids to maybe do things that, you know, you're not wearing a dress and you're not playing with Barbies. I think it's okay to sort of push past those gender stereotypes because a lot of them are out of date. But that doesn't mean that you need to get surgery to be a different gender. It's very strange. JSN on the White House video, tit for tat or trans White House
tatas. Well, you used that phrase right after you did that story. You said tit for tat.
Tit for tat. So
a lot of people commented on that.
Oh, okay. Sarah says, I think we're all laughing at this one. Yeah. Let me see here. On the Seattle City Council and their ongoing struggle to figure out what to do about the drug crisis, despite, you know, the decade of it getting worse. Matthew says, why does the Seattle City Council need over 8 weeks to figure this out? They don't. And that was the thing I said yesterday. The proposal that Andrew Lewis voted down last week, it was proposed in April. They had all that time to say, no, that's not the plan that's going to pass. Instead, Andrew Lewis made everyone believe that he supported it until the last possible moment, then shocked everyone in the room by voting no, and then came out the next day and said, I'm going to come up with a real plan. That's crazy. That's insane. Let me see here. Delvin says, Brandy, I have to humbly disagree with you on the Washington State Supreme Court ruling that found the drug law had to have the word knowingly in the law. Strict liability applies in many laws in the U.S., example, traffic laws. Yeah, and I get that. I think that 99.999% of the time when someone was arrested with narcotics on their person or in their possession, they were there. So, like, they knew they were there. But I do understand the desire for the law to allow for the possibility that, let's say, I'll date some guy, he gives me his coat, and there's crack in his coat. And I'm like, that's not mine. It's really not mine. I understand that. And I would never want someone to be wrongfully convicted of anything. And so to me, adding the word knowingly didn't hurt anything and would have been a better law. It's unfortunate that it led to all this sort of fallout in the criminal legal system and all of these payouts. But I guess I just don't know what else you do when a law is deemed unconstitutional. And you're like, hey, you know, I had to spend X amount of time in jail, or I lost these job opportunities because I was convicted on an unconstitutional law. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, here we are. Okay, good comments today. Let's get to our closing sanity check. So you may recall, I interviewed Governor Jay Inslee back in January. I was actually doing the show after Dory Monson passed away. And so it was really odd because Jay Inslee's team had reached out when I was filling in on that slot and said, the governor wants to come on with you. And I was like, that's weird. And he wanted to come on and tout his homelessness housing plan. And one of the questions I asked him as he was making this big push, you know, it's his last term in office, to say, oh, I'm going to fix the homelessness issue. I'm like, why didn't you fix it in any of the previous 10 years? So I wanted to play this exchange again I had with the governor, because it's very similar to an exchange that California Governor Gavin Newsom had last night with Sean Hannity. So here's my exchange with the governor from January.
When I hear you say we're going to do this on a big scale in your 11th year as governor, I'm like, well, what was stopping him from doing something on a big scale or something meaningful for the past 10 years?
Well, I think that, you know, your point's well taken. Obviously, it wasn't helpful when I had a legislature under Republican control that, you know, wouldn't pay a dollar to see a mouse eat a bale of hay. Okay, so that made it a little more difficult early in my term.
We can't, I'm going to just stop at the blaming of Republicans for literally anything in the state because they have zero power. They have zero power. Yeah, I mean, they have zero power.
Yeah, so I just thought it was ridiculous that here you have a governor, I mean, a state where there's been a Democratic governor for 35 years. He had been the governor for 10 years. There's been a Democratic trifecta in Washington for 7 years. Yet here's the governor in January somehow finding a way to blame Republicans for the state of homelessness crisis. And I'm like, I absolutely will not allow that. So anyway, Gavin Newsom does a really odd interview with Sean Hannity. Gavin Newsom, who of course is going to find a way to squirm his way into the office of the presidency. I mean, he's going to run. I know he's saying he's not, but he is. And this whole topic came up with the state of the homeless situation in California. And it's not good. And Gavin Newsom admits that in this clip, but he also pulls a little page from Governor Inslee's playbook. Listen.
After 10 years, we reduced the street population by 33%. You know what? I'm proud of the fact we established the goal, and we did it with the Bush administration, with Republicans. We did it with a framework where we were actually identified by George W. Bush as one of the leaders in terms of establishing not only a framework of a plan, but delivering on what we promoted and promised. And I agree with you. You know, yes. Michelangelo said it best. The biggest risk in life is not that we aim too low and reach it. It's we aim too high and miss it, rather the opposite. My point being, we have to be audacious. And in so doing, we actually made progress. This state has not made progress in the last two decades as it relates to homelessness.
Why?
Because housing costs are too high, our regulatory thickets are too problematic, localism has been too impactful, meaning people locally are pushing back against new housing starts and construction. I've been here 4 years. I can't make up for the fact in 2005 we had an historic number of homeless under Republican administration.
Right now there's 171,000 estimated. Okay.
Disgraceful.
And all right, I'll compare to Florida again.
Oh, yeah.
26,000.
Of course.
Okay, same weather, similar state. I mean, I've lived in both.
Dynamics are very different. That said, we own this, Sean. I'm not here defending this. Okay. But here's the difference.
But you're going to build 1,200 homes this year, I read.
That's not true.
You have a proposal.
I just got 68,000 people off the streets last year. And by the way, that's been PolitiFact, 68,000. I have a $15.3 billion homeless plan. When I got here, it was $500 million. The state of California was not involved in the homeless issue. We got involved. We're holding cities and counties accountable. I'm suing cities that are not producing housing. We actually have a 15-year high in new housing starts in the state of California. We're actually seeing programs produce real results, but I want accountability. I'm not the mayor of California. I'm governor of states larger than 21 states. Populations combined. And the difference between me and most politicians is I own this. I take responsibility for this. This is personal to me. I love this state. I don't like what's happening with the encampments.
I don't like what's
happening in the streets and sidewalks. I don't like the bashing of my old city, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Whole Foods did shut down one business, but there was a bad location to begin with. They're opening a new one. We have 2.7%.
My sister was out here recently with her team, and I said, don't go to the wharf.
Certain parts are bad. And we own that. And I just put the National Guard and the CHP down there. Hundreds of millions. I know. And by the way, you mentioned defund police. Don't accuse me of that.
Yeah. So I find it interesting. He's like, I own this, which, great. Love that you actually, those words are coming out of your mouth. But then he's simultaneously hearkening back to 2005 under, you know, Republicans. That's wild. It's 2023. 2005 was almost 20 years ago. And it just reminded me of Governor Inslee. Like, any way to just squeeze in a little blame for the Republicans. The truth is, even if there had been Republican leadership, you know, in California, in Washington, you know, for the last two decades, if you are a Democrat, if you're someone of any political party and you're in charge and you've asked for that job, everything is your fault. Everything moving forward, you have to take blame for because you've asked for that level of accountability. And I think that's what all of us, regardless of political party, have to accept and expect from our politicians, is that the buck stops with them every time. And they don't hearken back 15 years and say, yeah, but the Republican, all under George Bush. That's ridiculous. So I'm glad Gavin Newsom is at least willing to say, yeah, I own this. I'm not happy with the state of things. I'm not happy with what's happening in San Francisco. But if he wants to be the president, which I suspect by doing that interview, that's what he's trying to say, is he does want to be the president. He's going to have to take blame for everything wrong in the country the day that he were to take office if he wants the presidency, because that's the job. And all of us have to expect that and hold him accountable for it. Okay, that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A reminder again, we're going to have a meet and greet this Sunday in Arlington at Elemental Cider Company, Father's Day, June 18th, 2 to 4 p.m. Stop by, say hello, and if you would like, sign Referendum 101 to give parents in Washington State a chance to fight for their rights. Can't think of a better thing to do on Father's Day. In the meantime, thank you to Undivided subscribers who make this show possible. If you're not a subscriber, why not? Sign up. It's just $5 a month. You can go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And you can also find ways to watch clips from the show, listen to the podcast of the show, reach out to Nicole and I, but most importantly, become a subscriber to support the show and the mission to give common sense a comeback. I will see you back on the live show tomorrow.